Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, silliness, opinions I probably should have kept to myself, and other things that make my advertisers mad at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Matt, the Minion. Well, are you expecting more?
Yeah, usually ask, how are you?
Oh, I don't care how you are.
Yeah, well,
no.
I don't care you are either.
Good. So anyway, we're going to be joined tonight by Chuck Haggard. Going to be discussing active shooters, spree killers, however, whatever your favorite buzz term is for that. Just a quick thing, real quick. We lost a police officer here in Cincinnati on Friday. By all accounts, an amazing man, father, husband. We're going to be doing a fundraiser, as we have done in the past. We're going to be selling some of our original Mushroom Cloud Ballistic Radio hazmat signed T-shirts, with all the proceeds going to benefit the family. So we're not keeping any money from that, just whatever the shirts cost, it's going to cover that. And then everything on top of that is going to go to them. We've done it twice. It's going to be a different color than the last two were. That's kind of the plan, is that anytime we do this, it's going to be a different color shirt. So tune in for more details. Probably Tuesday, I'm hoping to have the design done, maybe Wednesday at the latest. But you'll be able to find that and find out where to buy it at our Facebook page, facebook.com/ballisticradio. Just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, let's just get Chuck on the phone. I could talk about going to the Pat Rogers Shoot House and embarrassing myself in front of everyone on day four? I can't remember. But I'll save that for another show when I have Pat or Steve on, since they both witnessed it firsthand. So anyway, joining us, Chuck Haggard. Chuck, how are you doing?
Doing okay.
So for those that have not heard your other four or five appearances on, I can't even remember now, but you were one of our first guests. You've been on the show multiple times since then. Can you go over your background real quick? Tell us what you're doing now, and then we'll get right into the topic of tonight's show.
Got a little bit of military background. Did 28 years with the Topeka, Kansas Police Department. I have retired from TPD. Kept a part-time deputy commission in a county north of where I live so that I could stay active with law enforcement, help them out with their training. And as you know, since then, I've started my own company, Agile Training and Consulting, so I can kind of formalize in the private sector what I've been doing for a couple of decades, which is like firearms and tactics training, that sort of thing.
Well, there you go. So there's been a lot of talk of, you know, of active shooters in the news lately. Unfortunately, we had a terrible tragedy occur at a church out on the East Coast. I don't want to give that gentleman any publicity, because I think that's half the reason they do it. So I'm not gonna talk about that event so much. But I do want to talk about the generalities or typical things that we see, because there seems to be a lot of commonality between these incidents. And you've actually had some experience responding to these, correct?
Yeah. During the course of my career, I was actually involved in responding to two active shooter incidents that we had here in Topeka. Both of those would be, well, for want of a better term, non-traditional, because they weren't a workplace violence, you know, the proverbial going postal, and they weren't a school incident. One of them was an attack on our federal courthouse downtown by a guy that had been, he had been convicted and knew he was facing sentencing and going 10 to 15 years on the case that he was being convicted on, but he was out on bond, awaiting sentencing hearing, when he decided to build a bunch of bombs and take some guns and go walk into the federal courthouse and start shooting the place up and throwing homemade IEDs all over the place.
Right.
The second one was a domestic, actually it was a domestic violence incident where the female half was living with her family in a very kind of extended family, very, very large. We have a lot of old multi-room, multi-level Victorian-style houses here in Topeka, and it was one of those large houses when the male half decided to come over and kick the door in and kill everybody in the house, or at least try to.
Right.
That was the second incident. Both of those were actually pre-Columbine, so the whole active shooter, you know, I'm making my air quotes here with my fingers.
We call those bunny years here at Ballistic Radio, Chuck. You need to get the terminology right if you're going to keep coming back on the show. Bunny years. So, anyway, continue, please.
Well, that you know, the whole active shooter terminology had yet to hit you know, the nationwide vocabulary. Not a big fan of active shooters. You know, Ron Borsch is another trainer that I network with. Talk about, you know, some of this stuff that he likes to use rapid mass murder.
Yeah,
it's a mass murder in progress is what we're talking about.
Correct.
One of the things that grieves me to no end about our 24-hour news cycle nowadays is that, as you said, they do it for one of the things they do is for the publicity and the recognition. And if you look at what happened at Columbine, where those two scumbags ended up on the front cover of Time magazine and Newsweek, and now, you know, there are people who want to emulate them,
right,
who study them, who try to get a bigger body count. It's like a video game.
Yeah.
That, you know, who gets the, remember the old video game arcades? If you got the high score on the video game,
yeah,
you get to put your initials in there with the score. It's kind of like that sort of thing going on. the publicity feeds the problem.
Right. Right. Well, and that's, you know, I had a couple of people ask me why I had not talked about this more during the week, at least on the Facebook page, and that was one of the reasons, is I didn't think that I would be able to say anything that was worthwhile, and the other thing, too, is I did not want to add to that problem. But we've got about 45 seconds left, you know, in this segment. As far as for our purposes, you know, what are some things to think about in these situations in the next 30 seconds, and then we'll talk about it more next segment.
There's a myriad of things to think about if you are caught up in one or responding to one, you know, cop, civilian, whatever. I'm saying civilian with bunny ears as well.
Thank you.
Cops or civilians, and not subject to UCMJ. So there's a whole laundry list of things.
Well, how about you hold that laundry list in your head, and then we'll talk about it here because we got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Chuck Haggard. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by the Paulipalooza 3 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 15th and 16th outside of Garrettsville in northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. For more information, visit paulthepalooza.com. Remember, save the date, August 15th and 16th. So, for those that were listening to the commercial break and noticed there was some dead air, that's apparently a newfangled thing that we're doing here at the station where our commercials don't actually play. So, hey, there you go. Anyway, we're joined by Chuck Haggard. Chuck, are you still there?
I am.
So you had this nice long commercial break to think about that laundry list of things that we should think about as people that are interested in preparing for this sort of thing. Do you want to go over that now?
They mentioned in Paulipalooza, I actually taught a class on this very subject at one of the Paulies. I forget if it was the first one or second one. But
it was the second one because the first one was Excited Delirium, and that was my
that is true.
My first introduction to you in person. So I remember these things. But my, how, geez, 4 years have passed. Yeah, because anyway, we're going to reminisce on the air and then just lose this segment. But so, yeah, what are some of the things that we should think about? I mean, I know the obvious one seems to be have a gun, but You know, let's
yeah, no, I'm a big believer in that. The quickest way to shut down an active shooter incident is somebody to start returning fire to put tactical pressure on the bad guy. If you look at, I was one of the people involved in local training after Columbine. There was this big push. We got to do something about this. And some of the ideas are rapid response. And I'll throw out that a lot of what people think happened at Columbine, like the cops just barricaded up and then they didn't do anything and blah, blah, blah. It's not true. There was not quite the trained, organized response that we would like to see, but a lot of what people think happened at Columbine is mythology.
Right.
We do know that the faster that you can put tactical pressure on the bad guy, the quicker that their plan comes apart. One of the things that was controversial a few years ago, Ron Borsch was talking about it, I was talking about it, I wrote an article for the Tactical Wire on solo officer response to the active shooter incident, is that the fact that if you're a first responder, if you're a cop or if you are caught up in the incident, such as the mega church incident over in Colorado where the lady who was a concealed carry person was at the church and returned fire on the bad guy. If you're all by yourself, although that's not, ideally you got a platoon of Marines with you with, belt-fed weapons and stuff,
but right.
It's kind of hard to come up with them on a moment's notice. But the solo responder with a gun that puts gunfire, tactical pressure on the bad guy is historically the most successful way to end an incident like that.
Right.
So being armed anywhere that you can be armed. I'm a big believer in non-cops carrying guns. Everybody, legal good guys who are trained and, have the proper mindset, have the proper, and I don't think everybody should have a gun, but I believe that people who avail themselves of their Second Amendment rights should have the ability to do so if we assume that they're not. Mentally ill or drug addicts or something.
Right.
And that is one of that's something that I really believe in as far as if you look at any incident in which there was somebody armed on scene that acted, like the Charlie Square incident in Utah, the church incident that I spoke of, be that person a cop or not a cop, typically that incident ends right there.
Right.
Charlie Square, Utah was the case, although the off-duty officer didn't hit the bad guy with his gunfire, once he engaged the bad guy, no more good people died.
Right, right.
And that is a kind of a commonality in a lot of these incidents.
I was going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, most, not all, but most of the times when the individual is confronted, they, if they are not immediately stopped by the incoming gunfire, they kill themselves, don't they?
It's very, very often. They're either, like in the Charlie Square incident, he pinned the bad guy down. A couple of SWAT guys who were working patrol showed up. He tried to engage them. They killed the guy.
Right.
Typically, they suicide. Either you shoot them or they take flight. Whatever the case may be, but typically they'll kill themselves at that point.
Right.
If you don't do it for them. On the second case that I had, when I went to engage the guy, I got a muzzle on him and he started backpedaling and he ended up shooting himself in the head.
Right.
And I'm utterly convinced that saved lives in that case because there were other people who were potential victims at the house that did not die.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so that seems to be the, I guess if anyone wants to fast forward to the end of the show, the number one takeaway is that the quicker good guys with guns show up, probably the sooner something like that ends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for, since we've got another, 25 minutes of the show and all that, and it'd be silly to end the show right now. What are some other things to consider inside of all of that? I mean, Where would you like to go with
this? I'll look at, if I'm in any venue where it's a large public venue, if I'm at a mall or, you know, whatever the case may be, one of the things I keep an eye out for is where's my fire exits? How do you get out of here? Because there could be some other emergency. You know, people in various parts of the country, you might have an earthquake problem or whatever, you know, that having some situational awareness of your surroundings, how to get into and out of the area you're in safely.
Yeah.
If I was in a venue that I couldn't be armed for whatever reason, I would, a lot of those are public buildings. I'd be looking at areas where a lot of times there's a fire extinguisher on the wall in one of those glass cases, break glass in case of fire.
Yeah.
Dry chemical fire extinguishers are a pretty good improvised weapon, and they also throw out a kind of a smoke screen that
yep.
you can use just in a military context to cover movement if you need to evacuate. One thing that I talk about in my classes on active shooters, civilian response to active shooters, is a lot of people will talk about having a truck gun, have an AR-15 or some sort of a semi-automatic rifle in their vehicle. And when I ask people, what exactly are you talking about? Because if you're in an active shooter incident, and let's say you're at the mall and then an active shooter breaks out, are you going to run to your car, get your gun, and come back? Because if you do something like that, one thing that I can guarantee is going to happen, right, wrong, however you look at it, is the cops are going to kill you.
Right.
There won't be time for you to go, no, I'm the bad guy, or I'm the good guy, not the bad guy.
Right.
They're going to see somebody running around, not in police uniform, carrying a rifle in the middle of a mass shooting incident. They're going to shoot that guy.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. And then why would you run back into the shooter incident if you've already gotten out? That makes little sense to me. I tell a lot of people, if you want to do something constructive, because a lot of people think of an active shooter incident as, you know, even in the cop level, we have this active shooter incident, we do this training, we go, we do the rapid response, and then we put the bad guy down or he kills himself, whatever. Okay, now what? Well, now what you have is a mass casualty incident.
Right.
It would be more useful if somebody had a big medical bag full of trauma supplies and was familiar with something like, you know, tactical combat casualty care, how to use tourniquets, things like that, because you're going to have casualties. We know at Columbine and several other incidents where people bled out that they could have been saved, who ended up dying because they didn't get care. They didn't get enough care in time to save them.
Well, I mean, and you know, the classic example of that was the TSA agent that got shot at the airport, you know, and laid there on the ground for quite some time and
mm-hmm.
before responders got to him and, you know, expired. So I would make an argument that medical care is one of the least paid attention to, most overlooked areas inside of the tactical community that is really a shame, you know?
I agree. And that's one of the few good things that's come out of our like whole war on terror thing. And you know, we have some hard lessons learned. People have bled, people have died, to learn the TCCC philosophy and what works and what doesn't. You know, in the civilian medical community, in many areas, tourniquets are still thought of as a bad thing and a last resort.
Yeah.
And we know that training is so, it was never valid and it's so outdated by modern knowledge that, you know, we shouldn't even be having that discussion in the year 2015.
Well, it's amazing how many conversations we have in the year 2015 that we shouldn't be having, at least in my opinion. So, but, you know, luckily I have a job, so there's that. I mean, a positive on that. We got about a minute left. As far as, you know, as far as some priorities inside of this, you know, one of these events, if you find yourself in one, where do you draw the line between escaping at all costs and trying to do something about it, you know, if you find yourself in that?
I would say if you're in contact or not in contact, if it's happening right in front of you and you can see, you know, hey, there's a shooter over there, or you don't, maybe it's the other end of the mall. I think that would be the type of thing that would color how I'm going to act from there.
Right. And I suppose we have examples of of either direction with negative and positive outcomes for the person responding that we can talk about. We've got to go to break. Right now we are talking with Chuck Haggard about active shooters, even though we don't like that term, spree killers or active mass murderers. Anyway, and you are listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we're talking with Chuck Haggard about spree killers, active mass murders. I'm sorry, Chuck, that I can't come up with a term that I like for this. I mean, you know, dirtbags seems to work well, but it doesn't fit into the cool buzzword schema that we're supposed to have doing this, I guess.
I think Ron Borsch is the one that, of course, it doesn't quite roll off the tongue. Active shooter, you can throw out and everybody knows what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Rapid mass murder in progress is a pretty good description, but, you know, it's hard to say repeatedly.
Yeah. And for the sake of people knowing what I'm talking about, I unfortunately will probably keep using the old standby. So before the break, we were talking about the delineation between, you know, do you get involved, do you not get involved? And you had pointed out that it depended on the proximity of the event in relation to your location, you know, as a good rule of thumb to go by. I guess we have examples of either of those. I know there was a shooting where someone with a concealed carry permit who worked at a mall went looking for the shooter, and for some whatever reason, and this was probably the least sound part of his decision-making process, instead of shooting the guy when he came up to him, confronted him, and then ended up getting paralyzed, you know, from the waist down. So, I mean, that's one anecdotal event. Do you have any others, or?
Not quite specifically like that. That as far as a non-LE response where they go hunting for the bad guy looking to make contact, it's hard for me to mentally come up with one of those.
I guess we should have talked before the show about this.
Pearl, Mississippi, I know the principal there had to go out to his car because concealed carry was
right.
He was a legal concealed carry person, but it was illegal in the school. Of course, you don't want to lose your job, et cetera. So he had to make it out of the school, get to his gun in his trunk, and then go back into the school. But obviously, being the principal, he had a extraordinary knowledge of the layout of the building
that
he was in. And he also, like, physically knew the person doing the shooting.
Right.
In the mall case, I have to wonder, and I haven't had a chance to talk to that gentleman or read anything really in depth, but why you would try to take an active shooter at gunpoint as though you're going to arrest them or whatever. You know, and that's something I talk about in my law enforcement classes. If you look at the legalities of the cases like Graham v. Connor and Gar versus Tennessee, if you have an active shooter in progress, the police officers are under no obligation to use verbal commands to tell the person to drop the gun, et cetera.
Right.
You can literally shoot them on sight legally. And I think morally and ethically, that's precisely what you should probably be doing. And part of it part of the thought process, I think, should be, you know, what are my skills, my capabilities, my training, what equipment do I have with me? Now, let's say I'm a civilian or I'm a cop, and maybe I'm an IPSC M-class shooter, or, you know, I'm a master IDPA guy, and I'm carrying a Glock 34. My tactical flexibility as far as being able to put pistol fire on somebody at distance or rapidly at close range is probably significantly different than a dude that's not had any training and he's got like a Ruger LCP in his pocket.
Right.
that the equipment and training give you greater option flexibility as far as how to handle something like that.
Well, I think there's something to be said for knowing what your natural inclination is. You know, I've had this discussion with William April on the air as far as tailoring your response and your training to what you are likely to do, you know, and we were talking with John Hearn about the Newhall massacre and the gentleman that responded to that. And I thought one of the, you know, one of the most interesting quotes from that incident was, you know, I turned on the old road and saw the last flashing lights and the gunfire, and I knew which direction to go. My feet just took me the other way. You know, where the individual, the civilian that got involved, didn't think it was a good idea to get involved, knew he shouldn't, and did anyway, you know?
And I'll say that he's the only guy that put a pistol shot on either one of those bad guys.
Yeah, yep.
Unfortunately, none of the four California Highway Patrol officers returned effective fire in that incident.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, as y'all are listening to the show or whatever, we're going to give you some, you know, our thoughts on this and some general guidelines and all that. But I think there's something to be said to knowing your own capabilities and knowing what your likely response is and thinking about it inside of that context.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and this is just a big manifestation of things that we should be talking about in the self-defense training or concealed carry training or, you know, people carrying guns for, I don't think everybody has, they get themselves into a situation, they haven't completely thought out what they're going to do.
Right.
Mops Ayoub is pretty famous for decades. He's been teaching that, you know, these are decisions that you have to make ahead of time.
Yeah.
I've met people, and you know, I recall a young man that was halfway through our academy here in Topeka, and we're hitting firearms training, and it dawned on him that, you know, it may be 2 days after the academy, he could walk into an armed robbery in progress and have to shoot somebody. And the enormity of that finally sunk in. He actually resigned from the academy.
Really?
Which looked good on him for doing the right thing. It's a really bad idea to carry a gun if you don't have the ability to apply deadly force when you need to. That's just a bad idea. A gun is not a talisman. It's not a good luck charm. It's not bad guy repellent. It's a tool of deadly force. And that's a decision. You know, if somebody's ethics or morals or religion, whatever, won't let them make that decision or to take another human life if they need to, then they probably shouldn't be carrying. But definitely that's a decision that needs to be made well ahead of time.
Well, and it seems like for a lot of people, excuse me, I don't want to say a lot of people. For some people, you know, the gun is just another thing that they carry that's like a watch, you know, a nice watch or, you know, a fancy wallet or whatever, where it's an accessory and there's no thought given to, you know, what is this tool actually for?
Mm-hmm.
And you bring up something good that I think we should focus on for a minute. Now, you were talking about the cadet leaving the academy because, you know, he realized that he could not use deadly force or didn't want to get involved in that situation. I actually think that there is a huge, like, gulf inside of our industry, even inside of the professionals in our industry, where, you know, they will acknowledge a shortcoming inside of their own head, but then not do anything to remove themselves from that situation. You know, I recently was talking online about an instructor deciding not to allow something into his class. And, you know, for some reason, I think it got skewed to where I was saying it in a negative way. But I actually thought, you know, that was a really good decision. If you don't feel comfortable teaching something or handling something inside of your class, that's what you should do. You should mitigate risk beforehand or make sure that you don't have to deal with that situation. Not enough people do that, you know. So.
Yeah, and that's and the more people that get involved, the worse it is. You know, it's kind of famous that, you know, if you have an ongoing incident, the more people who are watching it, the fewer people who end up calling 911.
Right.
But he assumes somebody else is going to take care of it, type of thing. And it is common in a lot of, like, human activities for people to just kind of go along with the flow, not to speak up. not to be confrontational, that kind of thing.
It's
not exactly sure where I was going with that one.
Well, it's okay.
The same theme that you were talking about, that I know that, like, in my state, the concealed carry thing is, you know, they talk about the laws. There's a little short qualification course you got to shoot, you know, the legalities of it, et cetera, et cetera. There's nothing mandated in the training to talk about the ethical use of deadly force and whether people should be carrying guns or not.
Well, I mean, and, you know, even if we want to take that over to a skills side, you know, I get to have a lot of conversations with people, and it's not an easy conversation to have with yourself where, you know, okay, is it likely that you're at the mall and you need to take a 60-yard shot with a crowded background? No, that's not likely at all. But is it possible you find yourself in that situation? Yeah, sure it is. You know, and is it better to have thought about it beforehand and come to, you know, realistic conclusions about your abilities? You know what? I can't make a 60-yard shot with a crowded background. I don't feel comfortable doing that. I need to either move closer or not engage at all, rather than in that moment going, huh, well, I guess I'm just going to wing it. Bang. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's completely accurate. That's, we know in a lot of more normal, you know, not active shooter, you know, just like street crime type of thing, say, you look at the armed citizen and the write-ups they have in the NRA magazines. You look at a lot of those people who are very successful in self-defense shootings with zero training.
Right.
A lot of times having a gun, displaying the gun, shooting a gun, not even hitting the bad guy, that runs the bad guy off because they're not looking for armed resistance.
Well, and that's awesome, and I'm glad that works. And I have an idea where you're going with this, but hold that thought. Just because we got to go to break, so hold on to that. Right now we're talking with Chuck Haggard. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TacStrike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the Arch Frame Target Stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Hit their steel targets with more than about 50,000 rounds now of rifle and pistol ammunition without a single problem. For more information, visit them at TacStrike.com. So, man, Spine Shank, that's been a while. We went and saw a Spine Shank concert back in the day, didn't we, Minion?
Yes, we did.
Who'd they open for? Do you remember?
I think they opened for Disturbed.
Was that? Oh, yeah, it was Disturbed on their very first tour.
The Spine Shank and the Union Underground and Disturbed.
That's right. Oh, my God. Anyway, no one cares about that. God, we're getting old. So we're talking with Chuck Haggard. Chuck, are you still there?
I am.
Excellent. So hopefully you held that thought and we have not distracted you. we're in the last segment here. So what were you getting ready to say?
Hell, where was I going with that?
Oh, man. Really? Really, Chuck?
I was sitting there listening to banter about steel targets and...
Right.
And I was like, oh, squirrel.
Yeah, it's okay.
My ADD, ADHD kicked in. Well, what it was... We were talking about skill levels to handle the type of incidents that we're talking about.
Right.
And I think... Claude Warner and I have talked about this, and even though we're both in the training business, you know, the fact is a lot of people do, in fact, successfully defend themselves with zero training whatsoever, just having the willingness to act decisively and being armed, turning the tables on the bad guy, say a bad guy. You know, how many times do we see an 80-year-old grandma with a .22 rifle and some crackheads kicking in her back door? And she scares them off or shoots and kills them.
Right.
We see that sort of thing in the armed citizen quite often. However, as far as shooting problems go, that one is relatively simple. Whereas if you look at what it takes to interdict an active shooter, it's going to be a much more significantly difficult problem.
Yeah.
There's a number of cases that I can point to. The one down in Texas where the civilian helped the officer out. You look at for kind of compares a North Hollywood shootout, You look at the one on the Air Force Base. I forget which Air Force Base it was, where the Air Force security police officer ended the fight.
Right.
All of those were in the 70 to 90 yard range as far as the length of a pistol shot to be made.
Yeah.
For most people, I've met a lot of people at the public ranges that have trouble hitting paper at 7 yards.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's going to be well beyond their skill capability. Now I know people will say, well, you know, how often does that happen? And you know, in certain incidents, like if I'm going to worry about an active shooter at all, at some point I'm going to have to think about, you know, what does it take to get me out of that problem or solve that problem, end that problem?
And right.
Then it's not the odds, it's the stakes. You know, what is the price of failure in an incident like that? And that's the type of thing, like airline pilots. How often do airliners really crash?
Yeah.
Not that often, but one reason is because they take the training very, very seriously. They do a lot of war gaming, as it were, and do training in the cockpit so that if they have an in-flight emergency, that they can handle that problem.
Right.
And it may not be the odds, it's the stakes. What are the stakes involved if your airliner crashes? Well, then, you know, you got 200 or 300 people dead.
Well,
so,
and it's kind of like, you know, you might not get double bird strikes taken off, you know, one day and have to land on the Hudson. But if you do, that's, you know, you only get one run at that. So.
Well, and then I know the looking into the history of that incident, that was one of the captains that was kind of, you know, for... I can't really say, you know, what people would consider him on polite radio, but he's one of those guys that drove the training, made his crew do a lot of simulations all the time so that when it came time to do that for real, it wasn't, oh, my God, what are we going to do? They had practiced things like that hundreds of times.
Right.
A lot of serious training can be kind of monotonous and boring.
Right.
That's a fact of life.
Well, and, you know, once again, Rob Pincus uses a term that offends a lot of people, but I actually think is a pretty good term. He'll say hobbyist, you know, shooting mm-hmm. hobbyist. And I actually like that because for some people, this is a hobby or, you know, something that training is. They're training junkies that go to training a lot and all that. I'm talking more to those people than I am the person that owns a gun for self-defense, and that's as far as they're going to take it. But I would like to convert that latter person to the first person only because, you know, like you said, is it typical that you find yourself to where you need to make a 90-yard shot? No, that happens very rarely. But if it does happen, you know, relying on luck is not necessarily the plan that you should rely on, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah, I agree. You know, and if you look at a wide range of human activities, when we look at the medical type of stuff we were talking about, which would be part and parcel to an active shooter response, you know, I have not done first aid in an active shooter, but my recruit did on the second one that I was at. And if he hadn't have done what he did at the time, then the mother of the primary victim would have bled to death.
Yeah.
As she got shot in the right side of her face and cut one of the smaller arteries. I've had to use tourniquets, makeshift tourniquets. I've had to use some of my military first aid training and showing up on, like, I'm driving down the highway and, hey, there's a rollover accident and somebody laying in the ditch.
Yeah.
Some of the training, some of the things that we're talking about have wider applications than just that type of event. If you know trauma care, then you know trauma care, you know, and if it's
yeah.
a car wreck or an active shooter, you're going to be helpful. Otherwise, you're not going to be helpful.
Yeah.
I just think human beings should avail themselves of a wide range of training. I had to help. I was at a restaurant several years ago, and I look over, and there's a baby in a high chair choking, turning blue, and neither one of the parents knew what to do. And I had
right.
to grab the kid up and clear the airway, and I mean, they would have literally sat there and watched their child choke to death for want of knowing what to do next.
Right. Well, and I think that's a nasty side effect of the Google age, where instead of knowing how to do something, it's like, oh, I'm just going to watch a YouTube video, or I'm going to Google it. And this is not one of the, you know... one of the jobs that you can do that with. You know, you cannot do that with medical care at scene or shooting skills at scene. You just can't. So,
mm-hmm.
We're coming up on the end of the show, Chuck. For those that want to get more time with you in person, you're gonna be at Polypalooza, aren't you?
I am. I'm going to be up there again. I'm teaching a handgun manipulations, robust handgun manipulations, because Paul was a big fan of that. And then I'm actually doing a night fire, because a lot of people outside of law enforcement and military don't get a chance to do night shoots.
Awesome. I certainly am looking forward to taking those lessons blocks. I got to be on the range with you last year, and we got to point some dummy guns at each other, which I thought was fun just because always wanted to square off with Marshall Haggard. So as far as, you know, outside of Polypalooza too, tell us a little bit about your training company real quick, and then that'll probably take
us. As I said, it's Agile Training and Consulting. My website's agiletactical.com, because Agile Training somebody already took. AgileTactical.com. I do expert witness work. I've helped people out on, like, lawsuit cases and criminal cases. I've actually been a defense expert on a murder trial, oddly enough, but, you know, you go where the evidence leads you.
Right.
I do firearms training, tactics training, active shooter, low light. Because of my involvement in active shooters twice, that obviously became something that I wanted to get better at, more knowledgeable about, so that's been a multi-decade effort. I also teach offensive tactics, police defensive tactics, unarmed tactics type things, OC spray, that sort of thing. So
awesome. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing you up there. I'm going to try and get you into the area as soon as I can, because I think that you've got worthwhile stuff to say that the local people should get a hold of. So, Chuck, I appreciate you taking time out. Also, happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. My dad, especially, for getting me in the shooting. I just realized I didn't say anything. So, and you as well, Chuck.
Thank you, and to you.
Thanks. So, anyway, be safe, brother. I'll talk to you soon. Next week on Ballistic Radio, I have no idea, because I never do. I kind of like waiting to see what happens during the week and talking about it then. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.